Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is Cystine Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928#1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here is your host, Cystine Duckworth.
Hello, everyone. This is Celeste Duckworth, and you're listening to A Taste of Ink Live. We had a little glitch just a minute ago, so I'm glad you stayed with us. So today, our guest is Bert Sarkinen. Bert, at 16, quit his job as a farmhand and went to work for his father as a framing apprentice. This golden opportunity gave him the foundation to become a trailblazer in the hybrid timber framing industry. And he is fascinated with the way people tick and discovered that he could match people to the right timber framing options. And we're going to be talking about his book that was released in January, The Art of Hybrid Timber Framing. And I know a lot of you are out there asking, what is timber framing? But, you know, you have seen this. When I lived up in the mountains in Flagstaff, a lot of homes have timber framing. Traveling in Europe, there's a lot of places I've been just to have beautiful timber framing. I mean, it really is an art. And so I'm happy to have Bert on our program today. Hi, Bert. How are you today?
Hello, Celeste. Doing just fine. Thanks for having me.
Yes. I've been fascinated with your book. I've been going through it. And because I love architecture and I love just building and I love anything with wood, it's just got great pictures. And actually, you kind of get it's got a great history, too. But it's a good book. So I'd like you to tell our audience, what is timber framing and how can it help them?
Okay, well, you know, something you just said, and you mentioned that you just love wood. Well, that indicates that, you know, DNA-wise, that you are a solid, upstanding person. Really, timber framing is... I kind of said that in a joke about wood being part of our DNA and part of solid societies and all this. But really, wood's been used for building for so many generations and so far back that and it really does resonate with deeper emotions of belonging, love, acceptance, all these things that community brings and purpose. And timber framing is very old. It's how they used to build when they didn't have nails. And it's not a log cabin. It's similar. And then it's got posts. It's a big thing, 8x8, 10x10, 12x12 posts, maybe 12 foot apart. And there's kind of these, like, structures that are every, say, 12 to 16 foot apart with wood connecting beams. Kind of like the inside of an old barn.
Mm-hmm.
That is what timber framing is in its simplest definition.
Okay. And when you just said, it's interesting when you said that they didn't use nails back then to when they did it. So these it has to be a great art to be to do framing, because you're thinking about part of this is holding up a structure. So I'm finding this fascinating. So there's also a great design to it as well then.
Yes. With respect to the new nails, metal and forming metal has been, it's very old craft as well. But only back in the day, only the ultra rich, as they were made by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so what people did is they used a mortise and tenon with a peg that would join the two pieces together. And that's the actual definition of timber framing. Post and beam construction refers to, it looks the same except there's metal plates and bolts that hold things together. A little bit of terminology clarification there. And as far as the artistic part of it, that's become more modern day, blending it with different architectural styles. And the crafting of it, it's amazing what they did back in the day with relatively primitive tools and primitive engineering and anecdotal evidence they gained through building. It's just the amazing structures they put up with tight joinery and creative ways to join wood. And we will be as creative as we need to be. Our human mind is amazing.
So how can timber framing be personalized? Because I know that you like to, in a way, get to know your clients who are coming to you. How can it be personalized? How can it be a personalized art?
Well, Celeste, say, for example, you were going to do a remodeling makeover where you take something that's just a traditional type, typical type style of home, and you wanted to just do a makeover to give more some rustic vibe in some way, shape, or form. One of the first questions you would be asked, and so let's just go ahead and pretend you're doing that. You're going to, if you get your mind in that space, you're going to do a makeover. And so one of the questions I would ask you, Celeste, is that, so kind of looking at the whole picture, not just the timbers, they're going to have a big impact, but looking at colors, textures, choices such as stone versus wood floor laminates, whatever, light fixtures.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing from A to Z, and we think about applying a rustic factor to the overall look and feel. Describe the rustic factor, with zero being a modern hospital,
mm-hmm.
and being a log cabin with maybe antler, chandelier, rusty muskets, that sort of thing. What number jumps into your head?
10.
A 10, okay. Very good. You mentioned Flagstaff, and you're very familiar with timber framing, and so that's consistent. And so here's, the, now going further, one thing that we would do is we would have you do, we've got a quiz online, a style quiz.
Uh-huh.
It's about a 3-minute quiz, and we would have you go through that, and what that is you've got 7 sections with 7 words, so a total of 49 words, and we ask you in each section to select the top 1 or 2 words that appeal to you.
Okay.
And those words, in general, can be associated with different styles. And so we would do that. And what that does is it really gives us an insight, or when we're talking to you and you've got a collection of pictures you found online or in magazines and different things, it gives us another angle to interpret your pictures. Now, they say pictures are worth 1,000 words, but here's the problem. Let's say, for example, a picture really appeals to you and say, I really like this picture. And so we're looking at it, and what we're seeing is that, you know, how big the timbers are. Maybe there's an arch, maybe there's not. Maybe it's hand here, maybe it's smooth. And without you really knowing it, one of the things that really appeals to you in this picture is the color of the stone on the fireplace.
Okay.
So you're going to see where there might be a disconnect there, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the timbers, and without really knowing it, this picture appeals to you, but it's the color and the warmth and the vibrancy of it rather than just the timbers in particular. Style quiz, it's not going to be infallible. It does give us insight to use to interpret other information moving down the road, and it also gets us started on understanding each other's words. And that sounds a little bit weird, but sparse to one person might be something different to another, and whereas heavy might be mean two different things to different people. We all have nuanced meanings applied to words when we say them. And so that helps us better understand. It's just a starting point, and it's really been a lot of fun, and people have really enjoyed it. And style quiz, there's 7 different styles.
Okay. I was saying, when I was looking at the book, it was interesting because you're saying that, because I was looking at color, and I'm a person that really likes a lot of light. I like a lot of light, but I don't necessarily like a lot of, this sounds weird, windows. I do love what kind of, you know, when it comes to windows, I like what type of coverings to use. I'm not a curtain person. So when I was looking through the book, I was looking at some of the different wood colorings and how the color and the style actually opened up the light in the room without it being too open or looking like it's too wide open, which I thought was great. And I never thought about it that way. But when you're thinking about it, actually thinking about it, I have been to some places where they used a darker timber, and which gives it a little bit of a darker look, I guess you would say. When you look at some of the older big homes, I've been to Ireland. I lived in Ireland for a while, so when you go to some of the bigger older homes or some of the older castles, and you go to the rooms where they use different wood, it really gives something to the ambiance of the room. And I had never thought about that before. So when it comes to a personalized art, what happens when it's done right, or what happens when it's done wrong?
Okay. So as far as I'll touch back a little bit on the personalization process. That will bring us right kind of, we're still where we've brought you and your makeover. That is still in the infancy stage. What's going to bring, you know, the baby to see the light of day, so to speak, is a lot of hard work on our part and listening. So at that point, we're going to have that once we get started, we're going to have a target you want to hit budget-wise. We're going to have a collection of photos. We're going to have the style quiz. We're going to have the rustic factor. We will also have talked about how your inspiration has gotten started. That's the kernel. And now building this out really is working with a 3D model. We just really started churning through ideas and just really started churning through ideas. And eventually things start to kind of make sense, and we're using our intuition. We're just going for quantity, not quality, pulling on threads. And we'll get some 3D models put together, and we don't even – when we present these, we really preface people ahead of time that this may be close, it may be way off. There's going to be some things you like, some things you don't, and it's part of the process. So we'll show people, more often than not, we're pretty close because of our process in the front end, but that's neither here nor there how close it is. The point is that we look at the different ideas, figure out what's likable, you know, if it's what's not, and from there, then that's when rubber starts to hit the road. Now we start to really communicate, and so that process can be quick if things just kind of align and it's done. Other times it's a kind of a slow grind, but
mm-hmm.
the thing that people always know is I'm not the one saying when they cross the finish line. They're not even saying it. They just kind of instinctively know, okay, now this is really close. We got a few things here, but we're basically there. And so that kind of
mm-hmm.
happens fast and slow. And that during that process, that's when people are really putting their fingerprints on the project, and their own personalization is coming through. And we're just there as guides, poking and pushing and suggesting ideas and trying to be mindful of the budget and that sort of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's really the personalization part of it.
Well,
and
you have some really great... Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay, and then so from in that process, you know, say, for example, you wanted something that kind of had a lot of rustic flair but maybe had a modern twist to it. Well, you know, and that's one of the things that we do in our beginning things as well, and if there's an exercise in the book to getting there.
Right.
Is to create kind of a decision compass in defining what is the target. And it could change during the thing, but say, for example, you wanted a lot of rustic influence, but just a modern twist to it and kind of have some fun with it. Well, that would influence how close the timbers are spaced, what size they are, what colors they are. It might mean that you use some playful colors with some brackets or some cables. There's a lot of different things that come in, and it's situational as well, depending on how your home is set up, how it's sited, where it's looking at. And that's really where that will become clear in the choices you make. And if we do the good job in the beginning, trying to work on really defining the essence of what you're trying to achieve down to 3 to 7 words, then it's easier to come up with ideas that are going to work. But it doesn't matter if that's done perfectly or not, because the process, is combined with patience, will give you what you want when you make it work.
Okay. So in the book, you have a part talks about avoiding the money monster. What is the money monster, and how can we avoid it?
Okay, so the money monster, the reason I kind of refer to it as a monster is it's the measuring stick that we use to measure so many things in life. But am I, you know, worth my salt? Am I doing the right thing? Did I make a mistake? And am I getting hosed? There's a lot of emotional things that are connected and measured with money. And that's kind of why I refer to it as a monster. And avoiding that really comes down to three things: knowing yourself and kind of being okay with failure. Another
mm-hmm.
big thing is comes down to knowing yourself and knowing what kind of behaviors left done or undone put your teeth on edge, leave you foaming at the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the other one is knowing which kind of behaviors or actions, done or undone, bring a nice smile to your face. Pleasant smile.
Okay.
And if you can kind of get a hold of that, that's going to give you some real indication on who to hire, how they roll.
Okay.
And to me, that's the 20% that's going to make the 80% of the building process good.
Okay. Okay. Another question I have for you is, what are the daddy long legs?
Well, that's a spider that has a real long nose. Yeah, that's kind of a comical term we coined for. Okay, so I'm going to back up. There's a chapter in there called Avoiding the Hail Mary Approach.
Okay.
I think it's chapter 18, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Avoiding the Hail Mary Approach, and the essence of that chapter basically states that when, say, you are designing a plan from scratch, you and your designer, by the time you figure out all the different floor plan trade-offs and everything that's going on with what you want, and you've reiterated and restated what you want, and in that process, you both get kind of tired, and there's fatigue that sets in. And for both buyer and designer's perspective, at that point, you know, placeholder timbers are good enough. I mean, cross that bridge later. And that kind of sets the stage for this Hail Mary approach. The engineer is trained and paid to engineer just what is structurally required, so no more, no less. So he does that. The builder, when he gets it, he sees, yeah, it's not all figured out, and some things are a little wacky, but, you know, right now we just need to see if we've got enough funds to get this together and how tight the budget is, and, you know, are we, you know, what. So he's got kind of the bigger fish to fry as well. So he doesn't really put a lot of time into how the timbers are going to influence the space. And then it sort of lands up on the framer, the traditional framer, and they ask him to put some beams up. Well, he has to scale things off of the print and just, you know, go back and punt or throw up a Hail Mary. And so the chances of things working out looks-wise and balance-wise kind of are stacked against that process. And that's the Hail Mary approach. And what comes out of that many times are posts that are just too skinny. They have structural integrity, but visually they lack grounding.
Okay.
They lack that visual mass that grounds the project together. But he's got kind of a big roof, and so to call skinny posts or ungainly, awkward architecture might be another way to describe daddy long legs. It refers to the skinny post that is just big mistake we see repeated time and time again with projects across our desk. Did I go too long on that, or is it clear?
No, that's great. That's great. So, you know, Bert, you're the founder of Arrow Timber, and what did you do when it came to putting your team together? Because I know it's very important for the success of a company when you have the right team.
Mm-hmm.
So, how did you do that? How was it?
You are touching on an area where I have made by far the most mistakes in business, and that's with hiring.
Okay.
And firing. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And one of my recent successes was I fired myself from a job that somebody could do better than me. Woohoo! Winner, winner, chicken dinner. And it's an ongoing thing, but the more I do this, the more I realize it. And if you can get people in the right seats doing what their DNA and what they do just almost upon waking in the morning, it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
If that can come into alignment, man, there's some real power there. Just things are just easy. And so that's been a process since I started. I haven't been aware of it. In my early days, I was kind of the guy in the middle doing it all with the kind of the Michael Jordan approach for carrying the whole team, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
And that, the advantage of that is you can be from 0 to 60 pretty fast and be effective, but your growth is limited, your potential is limited, and it's also very wearing. I mean, how long do you carry that kind of load?
And so
your question really is how to get the right people on the team. I don't believe there's a silver bullet. And for myself, it is to get me out of the way, get me out of my own way, get me out of the guy's way. And it sounds a little bit weird, but that's
it sounds great. Well, it's an aspect that you don't really think about, and actually, you know, you said it very well. You know, putting your own self out the way, and also finding people that are passionate in the area that they're passionate about, because we're talking, you know, talking about a, you know, timber framing company. I would think it's very important to have the right people working for you that you can feel that they can do the job like you would do it if you were in every aspect of it. So that's, you know, that's one of the, so what was the challenge? What was the real challenge after that? I mean, your team is a challenge. That's a challenge. But what mm-hmm. other challenges are, what's the biggest challenge that you think you've overcome in your business?
Biggest challenge that I've overcome in my business, I hate to do this, Celeste, but I have to point finger at myself again. I really do. mindset. The job that I recently fired myself from was in the sales seat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting in our guy's way and our client's way to better projects just because of a strong viewpoint and I guess you might say I don't know, it was I guess there's guys on the team that just do it better, and figuring that out was just really wonderful. And so one thing that I guess if I'm going to point to one thing that's been a struggle through my business years and that I kind of overcome to a degree, I think it's going to be like a recovering alcoholic. I don't know that I think I need to retain a healthy fear for it, but is being so dependent on acceptance and approval from clients.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would really just say some dumb stuff and make some dumb decisions just to scratch that itch. And kind of backing away and being okay with failure, with non-approval, and being a little bit less concerned about trying to always do the right thing perfectly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just backing
off
a little bit. In a word, you might even say, don't try quite so hard. Let the good and the bad both come and go a little bit. And I suppose that advice wouldn't apply to someone who's natured on the other side of the spectrum. But for me, that's been a big deal.
So on the other end, why do you think it's important for people to value their gifts? And what words of wisdom can you share about downplaying one's self? You know, your business is tied into personalities and character. So what do you think, why do you think it's important for people to value their gifts?
You know, that actually points to why I needed to be fired from the sales.
Okay.
And because, like, for example, I can spend 5 minutes looking at a model my guys have brought up, a 3D model. And put my finger on what's off, if the roof is too overpowering or looming or something, and if you're kind of getting in tune to, you know, the project, in a very short amount of time, I can put my fingers on what is off, and we can kind of brainstorm and get some ideas that solve this problem. And to me, that's like, I start to devalue it like it's not that big a deal, but if someone picture new, or if I could pull back and get clarity, you look at that and you say, well, they're going to spend $800,000 or, you know, $1.5 million on this place. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if it took you 5 minutes or 5 days to rectify that artistic imbalance and get timbers that fit. How much is that worth?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was selling, I couldn't. And then it's not always, socially, it's not good to blow your own horn all the time. So somebody else in that seat who can, A, see the value, and can freely blow my horn without getting into social faux pas. You know, it's better. They can tell people actually what's going on, where I was somewhat stymied and not being able to blow my own horn, but more stymied in not valuing what I bring to the table. It becomes every day and ho hum, and that I don't know how a person would avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it's funny. I never thought about firing myself, but I do have self-talk. And
okay.
My mentor told me the other day that I was crazy, because I said to myself, I said, yeah, Celeste didn't do a good job on this project. And so I'll talk about, you know,
okay.
I'll say, as if another person, she looks at me and I said, yeah, I have to work a lot with Celeste. I had not thought about firing Celeste from a certain job, but I have to consider that. Yeah, I do, because you're, you know, and we just got through talking about putting a person in the position where they're most passionate about. So I will say sales is mm-hmm. not the place that I'm most passionate about. So,
mm-hmm.
so I get that.
Great.
But I know that you can get into a thing where you're so passionate about your business and what you do, that you kind of get the ideal. You're like, oh, I can be in this department, I can be in that department, because hey, the business, that I'm good at that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, really, you're not good at all of it. So right.
You know, that blind passion you're bringing up. My guys have, for one of my behaviors, this is quite a few years old, where they say, oh, Bert's making a purple purse again, and making a purple purse. So this is when I would get talking to people and get an idea for maybe a design that might really, where I think it's going to just be dynamite. Sometimes I can get so passionate about it that I take off, I put on blinders and I don't see body language or verbal cues, or I'm not listening to feedback really. Just charging ahead
mm-hmm.
like a wild galloping horse. This idea. And
mm-hmm.
so they started teasing me about making purple purses, you know, unwanted, chasing an unwanted idea or develop an unwanted idea. So I think that's
mm-hmm.
applicable, like you were just saying, to other areas of getting passionate.
You, why do you recommend that people always break a sweat before taking a shower?
This habit kind of just developed accidentally. I just do better with activity myself, and I discovered that if I follow that rule, just
mm-hmm.
3 minutes of, say, air squats or push-ups or jumping jacks or even some stretching or a shower, it works with your psyche.
Okay.
In other words, if I do that, I always
mm-hmm.
think of myself as somebody who exercises.
Okay.
No matter if I go a long time with, I never go more than a week without doing something. So I see myself as somebody who's active. And
okay.
And then by tying it to a shower, I mean, how many days can you go without showering?
Right.
So that it
mm-hmm.
means that I'm not going to go that long without some sort of activity, and reinforce
right.
my self-image
okay.
as an active person. And then, you know, when you're active, there's a lot of health benefits and mental benefits and the whole thing. So,
mm-hmm.
so it never, never goes cold that way.
Good. That's true. You're right about that. That's very true. So what are the four levels of ugly, and how does this tie into being happy?
Yes, what our industry, the timber framing industry and the Art of Hybrid Timber Framing, this book, deals strictly with the most superficial level of ugly that we can speak of. And that's available, you know, anyone can look at it, and there are definite, you know, beauty in the eye of the beholder, so it's going to be opinion, but it's all right there where everyone can touch and feel it. The other three levels, you know, the first one starts with thinking and thought patterns, and then it goes to communication and then action. And there's, oh, I mean, it's complicated being human, isn't it, Celeste?
Yes, it is.
You know, we just back and forth, and sometimes we have clarity, other times we don't know if we're coming or going, and we lash out for things that we don't understand why we're mad, and so many things like that. It's kind of amazing. But our thought patterns and perspectives would be the deepest level of ugly. Our communication would be the next level, and then, you know, actions.
Mm-hmm.
The third level. And then the fourth level is like artistry or whatever. It's, you know, the beauty we see in nature. And it's kind of ironic that we all talk about, you know, the fourth level is the easiest to go through, right? That's obvious. Not quite as complicated as we are as humans.
Mm-hmm. So, why did you write the book, and who did you write it for?
I wrote the book. There's three potential buyers or readers, if you will. One is owners.
Mm-hmm.
The second is architects, and the third is builders.
Okay. Okay.
And so those are kind of the three people who have written for that could really benefit from using the book. If I was to boil it down to a real simple explanation, it would be anyone who intends to influence the look and feel of their building project with some sort of exposed beam. Just that. If it's like wood and you want to influence architecture with it, that is what this book is about. Not technical.
Okay.
It doesn't get into sheer equations and engineering stuff. There's a little bit where it touches on it. It gives a little background. But beyond that, it's all about getting the right look and feel.
Okay. All right.
And what was the second part of your question?
Who did you write it for, which you answered. You know, why did you write the book, and who did you write it for?
Okay.
And
here,
I think
here
that's
the other piece that, And then why I wrote it.
Okay.
The reason that I wrote it, where it came from, is that so many people, as they are going into the building process, they just are they kind of think we know what we want, but we really don't. I mean, when's the last, say, semi-major item you bought, such as a pair of shoes or a dishwasher, or what was the last thing you bought?
Last thing I bought was some bookshelves.
Bookshelves, okay. And was that a pretty easy purchase? I mean, pretty linear, where you just like, okay, you wanted this color and done, or was it something that you started to buy some, and then you're like, oh, hang on a second. No, I want this, or I need to get the other thing.
Well, it was a little harder purchase because I moved into a new place, and so it was hard for me because I tend to like the color gray or black. So it was hard for me because I wanted to maintain the look of space in my new place. So, you know, so it was a little hard. It was a little hard. So it was hard in the color, and it was hard in the brand, and if I wanted tall or short ones.
And,
right. So
if I were going to guess, if you're like me and most people out there, you went to go buy the bookshelf, thought you were going to be done in a couple hours, and then a day or two later, you still were kind of going through details, defining what you want, figuring out what's going to work, so you finally got it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we see, and you can imagine if you're going to build a home or do a remodeling makeover.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That stretches out to many, many more, much more complications and obscurity and ambiguity and unclearness and all that. And so we see people jumping into this and wanting timbers but not really knowing what they want, thinking that they know, but, and so like one of the quotes in chapter 4 is, tree must grow roots before vertical growth.
Uh-huh.
We as buyers and owners, we have to grow roots before we can actually start building. And people don't really have the mindset or the patience for that root growth. And so that's one of the things, first section, chapters 1 through 5, which is written to owners, it just really beats that drum that do the exercise to find what you want. It can be modified later, but do the exercise and really focus on that root growth. And part of that root growth is understanding that it's going to take time to grow roots. Normally don't just do it overnight because there's a lot of information to process. That's kind of why the book is there.
Right. Okay. Well, I like that explanation. I really do. And I also like looking at you from your perspective. That's actually a great analogy because we look at a lot of other things as, you know, it has to grow roots. So we always talk about how something has to have a really firm foundation to build on. But it's just kind of interesting to think about it in terms of, you know, buying things. But I really can see that because it is buying when you're having your home, remodeling your home or moving into something, it becomes a really important to make sure everything fits right. So, yeah, grows right into the new place rather than just putting stuff in it, you know. That's actually a great analogy. So when I was checking out your website and going around there, and for our listeners, you'll have to check out Bert's website. A lot of interesting things on there and videos. I personally like the inspiration report. So how did you come up with the idea to do that inspiration report?
It kind of surprised my wife, actually. She didn't know I could write. She was surprised. Her friends, when we first started it, they asked her, "Do you write that?" So I was a dark horse in that respect. But I've actually discovered it was a way to connect and educate buyers. And so this, even with the book and the inspiration report, the idea is to educate and then through my style of presenting information, people are going to figure out, you know, if they should be attracted to me or resell it by me. And that's kind of the ones we're meant to do business through, and we sell those who we aren't. That's where the idea of the inspiration report comes out. And it's just a simple way to connect support.
Well, I thought it was a great way to connect with people. I did think it was that, and I actually was reading through it, and I thought it was a great idea, so kudos for that. As we go to the end of our program, Bert, can you tell, give everybody an idea how to contact you?
Yeah, that would be arrowtimber.com, as in bow and arrow, A-R-R-O-W, timber.com. There's a contact right there. There's a style quiz, and you mentioned the inspiration report during the Knowledge Center. pretty easy to get a hold of us. There's phone numbers on there and there's all that. And there's even a place to order the book on the website. It's available on Amazon. But if you order order the book on the website, it comes with a kind of a workbook, a planning guide. So there's places to write and different exercises that are not in the book. And there's, because you get an audio version, so if you want to look at the pictures and then some of the content you want to absorb on the road, or just while you're leaving pans and whatnot, there's that. And there's also a digital copy. Just by ordering on the website. Oh, and I'll sign it, too.
Okay, great. So the last question I have for you, because we've talked about the book and we've talked a lot about your business, so I think what I'd like to ask you is, so what advice would you give to future business leaders about tenacity and perseverance?
I would say regarding tenacity and perseverance, most of the time, it's your friend. Most of the time, it'll pull you through. Sometimes, there's a point where it's just time to stop digging. And knowing when that point is would probably be my advice. And that's, I can't give a yardstick and a metric or a 1, 2, 3. Here's how you know when you stop digging. Here's how you know when you continue. I don't know myself half the time.
Well, I think you've done great with the book, The Art of Hybrid Timber Framing. And for my listeners out there, you know what to do. I have a copy if you'd like a copy to get in touch with me. And today we've been talking to Bert Sarkinen. And we've been talking about his book, The Art of Hybrid Timber Framing, and a little bit about Bert and his business. So, Bert, do you have any upcoming events?
Well, we've got a live webinar. So it's a job site from the job site. So Monday morning, I'm starting with an install, a pretty big install, a 10,000-square-foot home with a hybrid timber package on it. We're not going to get everything installed. This particular builder is installing himself, but I'm going to work with his crew for a week. And there's a lot of moving parts. There's safety, there's pieces, all kinds of communication that has been done over the course of the last 2 years. It's been a slow moving project. There's going to kind of rubber meet the road. There's going to be the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we're going to review that on Friday at 10 o'clock. Pacific Standard Time. There's going to be a live broadcast. We'll probably interview job foreman and what he liked to ask and what he thinks we could improve on. And so it's going to be candid and prompt to evaluation of how things went. And there'll be, of course, we'll see all the equipment. Trusses might even have a little footage of trusses going in place, which will be the day before, some crane footage. That's kind of a fun thing. We do these webinars roughly every 2 weeks.
All right. Okay. Well, I definitely appreciate having you on the program, Bert. And we will be announcing, we will be sharing with our social media this broadcast. And we will also have this broadcast in Vertical Life magazine as well. And we will also put Bert's information, and we were going to be putting the information on the event. So all of you out there, you won't miss that event. You'll be able to have the links to all of that. So Bert, thank you again for being a guest with us on A Taste of Ink Live. We really appreciate it. The book, The Art of Hybrid Timber Framing, it's a beautiful book. Talk with a lot of information, history, great pictures. If you're doing redesigning, if you're having a house built, if you love timber framing, this is the book that you want to get, and it's available at Amazon now. So, Bert, I hope you have a great day.
Well, thank you, Celeste. It's been a great interview, lots of insightful questions, and it's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you, too.
And I want to thank our team, Team Vertical. Thank you so much for helping us helping me put this program together. Thank you so much for the guests that we have today and other times. Thank you for our listening audience too. So as we go out here, just remember, contact me at info@verticallifemagazine.com. If you have any questions, if you have any interest in the book that I'm giving away, I will be sharing it on social media, so you'll be able to contact us and get this great book. I only got one copy, so don't delay. And everyone, have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, C. Steen Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalmediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope. And books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on BooksThatMakeYou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit BooksThatMakeYou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.